First, we will cruise down the 7 line over to Morton Street North into the Showers Plaza to City Hall and into the mayor's office we go. And our great friend is the mayor of the city of Bloomington. It is John Hamilton. Good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Welcome, welcome. Good to be with you again, Mike. I'm fine, thank you.
We need to take the show outside if the forecast is going to be in the mid-70s with sunshine and all these other great things going on. You know what? When it's below average temperatures and it's 76, 75 and sunshine, I just that's about as good as it gets. We can't really worry about that stuff.
And it's a nice stretch of season coming up. A lot of nice weather. Things start looking, turning pretty colors. It's going to be fun.
And we still have some days of summer left. The autumnal equinox, 2:49 a.m. Saturday, September 23rd. I'm going to have to get my parade permit. That's going to be a tight one there in the early morning hours. But
We'll make it available.
I like that. I'll pay double this year. That's fine.
Okay.
Well, it's a hard time of night. You know, you've got it's a big Friday night, early Saturday morning. You know, all kinds of things going on.
There will be people out there. There will be people out there, right?
There will be, and that's what I've got to be careful.
It won't be me.
The parade will be even slower at that that time of day. It's been busy since we have spoken to you last, the Tuesday after the Labor Day holiday. We had Deputy Mayor Larry Allen join us on Thursdays, and he shed some light on some things that were happening. But the big one that we did not get to last week that was happening right when you and I were on the airwaves, or just before or just after, I can't remember the entire timing, was the annexation ruling by Judge Nykerk in Lawrence County. Obviously, folks want to hear your opinion on this. The headline read something like bombshell decision made. Well, from the city's point of view, what did we learn last week, and how is that going to affect this process moving forward?
So it's always a little complicated.
It's a lot complicated. That's why I'm happy you're here to explain it.
There are two different lawsuits going on. This is the annexation that was begun in 2017, illegally stopped once by the state legislature, during which they then passed another bill. And we have two different lawsuits going on, unfortunately. One is based on the 2019 law that made the waivers disappear. And these are the sewer waivers that people got sewer service in agreement to join the city later in the future, and the state changed those rules. And we have felt that change was illegal, unconstitutional. So that lawsuit is a different lawsuit that's going on. What happened earlier, was the second lawsuit, which is dealing with the west side of Bloomington, the subset of what we called 1A and 1B, two of the bigger areas, did not, even with the illegally, in our view, stopped waivers, did not get enough to stop the annexation, but got enough to take it to trial. And what happened last week was the trial judge said, you know what, I don't want to host a trial until this other lawsuit on the constitutionality of the whole question is decided. We think that's a terrible decision, and we're trying to get that appealed. We'll see what happens with that. But in effect, that court was saying, you know what, I know that the law says we should try this case to see whether annexation is appropriate, and we're very confident that that would be successful. But the court said in response to the folks against annexation, said, you know what, let's wait and let this other case go, because if they decide that other case in favor of the city on the constitutionality of the waivers, we don't even need a trial. And our view is that could take years to get that done. So one of the phrases that you hear is annexation delayed is annexation denied, because often annexation opponents just want to delay, and that's kind of what we see happening. But we'll keep after it, and we'll hopefully get our day in court eventually.
I know you will. It's hard to comment on active litigation cases. What are the city's options moving forward after Nykerk's decision?
Yeah, it's tricky. In a way, we are, this gets super complicated, but because the state legislature once unconstitutionally stopped us, and during that litigation twice then took another step that we think unconstitutionally impeded the annexation, that's a constitutional and a high-level question, probably end up at the Indiana Supreme Court. The And we have to decide whether to appeal and how to appeal. There's two parallel cases going on, either of which they're both important. And so I probably can't really talk about litigation strategy other than we have to figure out how we want to proceed. And again, I would just remind you that this is just a basic, really important thing for the city to keep our boundaries moving as people develop properties, dense developments. We've done it for 200 years and then we stopped, and I've tried to pick that back up. If it doesn't succeed, it's a really difficult situation for the future of Bloomington, because you cannot annex unless you're contiguous with the city boundary. If you have a whole bunch of areas that are already developed and say they don't want to be part of the city, then the next person who wants to develop a housing development cannot annex, and so it's really not a good situation.
Where what happens when your term ends with this? Does the next administration pick up where it leaves off? How does that work?
Yeah, that'll be up to the next administration. There'll be a lot of the same lawyers in the city hall, I'm sure. But the new mayor will have to decide how and when to proceed when that torch is passed. We have talked a little bit about it, and I'll look forward to talking more with the new mayor about that. And I'm sure they'll get a lot of advice from other people, too, about it. But I will urge them to continue to do what I think is the right thing for the future of the community, and that's to try to get our boundaries adjusted to reflect the realities on the ground and to allow future growth in the coming decades, too.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest every Tuesday just after 4:05, and he is this afternoon. The budget process, we went through that, the 28th, 29th, 30th, and 31st, the final 4 days of August, made it through the Labor Day weekend and started answering and fielding questions from council last week into this week. I think, you tell me where we're at in the process and what is left to be done.
Well, we just provided late yesterday on our deadline the answers to the council's questions. I think we sent them about 30 pages or something of their questions and answers, dozens and dozens. I don't know the exact number. And so they have those. There were a few questions that got thrown over the transom late. We'll get those answered shortly. And then the process goes on. We actually have to submit the formal budget numbers, the dollar amounts for all the different accounts in the budget, by this weekend. And then September 27th, I think it is that right? 2 weeks from tomorrow is the first reading of the budget. And then 2 weeks after that, October 11th is the public hearing. I'm sorry, September 27th is the public hearing, first reading. And then 2 weeks after that, we expect to have a final vote on the budget.
What will happen at the public hearing part of it? Is that where folks can comment and say, you're not spending enough here, you're spending too much here? What goes on in that public realm?
Yeah, most of that public response probably did and should come in the last week, when we had the week of budget hearings, which have public comments on those. But the public hearing will allow people to come in and say, we don't like this number or that number. As you know, as we've talked about, the only thing that City Council can do at that point is reduce those numbers in each of the multiple city accounts for the budget for 2024. So some people may come in and comment on that, but most of the comment we've probably gotten. I'll go that night and I'll say, here's what's changed since we presented it in the late last week of August. Not a lot, probably, but we're still working on that. And then we will be talking about the $20 million or so of ARPA, American Rescue Plan, and the local economic development money that we've proposed allocating. So I expect that'll be some discussion that evening. And then the October 11th can be another set of discussions, and then hopefully they'll vote that night.
And that vote means it will be off and on to the state, and then all the T's will be crossed and I's will be dotted, and then that will be the roadmap for 2024. That's how this works.
You know what I should say? I said maybe I should hope our Washington, D.C. folks can get their budget done, too. they got a sooner deadline than that, don't they?
I think. Yours has to be balanced, correct?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
I don't know if you want their help.
No, we're okay.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. Another big meeting coming up tonight. A 40-foot monolith. The Board of Public Works, they're going to vote tonight on just getting things closed up around the Miller Showers Park so we can erect the entrance to town.
So the gateway, first of all, the meeting tonight is really just a very technical meeting about letting the contractor use the right-of-way. So it's not really about the gateway. It's really quite a normal.
But anytime we can get that
thing gateway
in the headlines, that'll be in there.
So. All right, you did it. But I don't want to encourage people to comment on the gateway at that point. But anyway, so this is a good story. You know, part of the bicentennial year, 2018, we passed with City Council $10 million of bonds to do a bunch of stuff. I think we called it trees and trails, basically. It paid for 4 new trails, hundreds of new trees, and one piece of it was also for some gateways to the city. And we looked at 4 different places. Frankly, the pandemic kind of blew up that process in terms of funding and timing, and we were distracted by a few things. But after the pandemic, we picked back up, and the Parks Department has led this project to do some gateways. And look, there can be different views about this. If anybody drives back and forth to Indianapolis, you see some gateways at different communities. Martinsville has some, and Green
Mooresville has the
Mooresville
flag.
Has some big ones and different ones like that. And I do think it's kind of a community putting a flag out and saying, hey, we're proud you're here. We're glad you're here. We're proud of what we do. We want you to enjoy Bloomington. So there's a lot of public input actually over the last 10 months or so, starting December last year as we picked this back up. And the Parks Board is kind of in charge of this. It's going to be at Miller Showers Park. They've had press releases and public meetings, a couple different ones, and open sessions, and gotten, I know, scores of comments from the public about it. Now, it is not surprising that not everybody loves a piece of art, and I think we've heard that a little bit, but I hope people will trust the process, let's say that.
You never know how long and tall, how tall the word Bloomington is until you stack the letters on top of each other. The monolith, was it always going to be a monolith? Because was there a horizontal option? Was there every option? This one, how did this process end up on this?
Yeah, so we really looked at multiple entries to the city, including the east side at 3rd and 446, including the west side at 2nd and I-69, kind of as you're coming in Twin Lakes and such. The budget proved to be we could only do 2, and we decided one was going to be 440. The bypass pedestrian overpass. You know that is just west of where we're talking about. It turns out that the Indiana Department of Transportation is going to be replacing that in the coming years, so we didn't want to move too fast on that. And that left us with the Northern Gateway, which is a very busy one and a great kind of entry into the city. And the architects and the artists looked at that space, and they look at it a lot of different options. But I actually think having this will be quite visible from the intersection, so even people going east on the bypass on to, like a football game or something like that, we'll see it both in the day and in the night. I think it'll be a really beautiful signal to folks that Bloomington's here. We're glad you're here. Enjoy the city. We're proud of our arts and our history. And
this was all by design, in other words.
Yeah, it's all a big design. And I think it's... some people said, hey, why isn't it all limestone? And I get that. Limestone's big. But, Bloomington has more than just limestone, too, and there'll be limestone features around it. But it's a way to get our name out there.
I think you nailed it earlier. No one's going to agree on art. That's absolutely right. John Hamilton is the mayor of the city of Bloomington. He joins us each Tuesday just after 4:05. And another headline today that I know has caught a lot of people's attention, and I'll just read it to you. It's from the Herald Times. Why are some mayor's office employees leaving with final paychecks of $24,000? I'd say, wow, they only got paid $24,000. That's the devil is always in the details, and This is for a couple deputy mayors who are obviously no longer deputy mayors. And how does this all work? This is kind of how the sausage is made. And I'm not in HR, and I know a lot of people aren't, but how, when someone leaves their position, what is the proper saying goodbye or proper final payment?
This is a little frustrating, Mike. I'll share. Look, the city has, like most public organizations, has very strict rules. We have an employee manual, personnel rules that we follow. They set out what any individual employee gets when they leave, and you have the right to get unused vacation time. You have the right to get some other things. There may be some benefits that you were owed. There may be some compensatory time, which is another category of leave. And it's all set out, and it's all based upon your leave when you go, what you didn't use. And it is a little frustrating that this article picks out four people by name out of all the people who leave and talks about them. It's, the article makes clear that all the rules were followed and all the these were, you know why they got so much money? Because they worked their tail off during the pandemic and during their service to the city and didn't take much vacation time. And I do get a little exercise. These are public servants, many of whom could make more money and do make more money in other places, but they serve the city. They work their tail off. Many of them, like Andrew Krebs, you may have dealt with him some. Andrew was running Zoom meetings for years, every night during the pandemic to help everybody communicate in new ways. And he gave the city enormous service. And when he left, he had a bunch of unused time, and he gets paid for it. And that's the way the law works. And if I didn't do it, he might sue me for not paying him, which he could do. So I was a little frustrated with the article. You know, we follow all the rules. We did within all these circumstances, and we'll continue to do it going forward.
And it's just a math equation, for lack of a better term?
Absolutely. Most employers have policies that say, you know, you can carry over this much vacation time, you can get paid out this much unused personal time off, sick time, leave time. And we do too, and it's under state law. It's not a discretionary thing. And again, if I hadn't paid them, I might face trouble on the other side.
So this isn't a formula the city comes up with, then?
It's a city. The city, as employer, comes up with this, and it's in our personnel manual. Yeah,
gotcha.
A binding document, and same with, you know, union members have union contracts that set these kinds of things out, and these individuals, which were identified in the article, were ones who had a bunch of unused vacation and personal time because they worked so hard. And when they left, they got that. I know if you look back over, and they didn't, but if you look back through the years, you know, you would see similar things among some of the higher level people who often work really, really hard for our community, and whether that was the past administration or others.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon. And one other big headline that made news late last week, the city of Bloomington is going to be in a pilot program for using, I can't remember the official name, but essentially it's going to be tasers. So that's new. How is that going to work?
Yes, tasers or electronic control devices are used to, I'm sure most people know that, to subdue somebody that the police are going to be arresting. And our police department has not had tasers before, but interestingly, when I came into office, one of the things I had done right away was review at the Board of Public Safety, which is a citizen resident-led board. Five residents oversee the police and fire. Had them review the several of the kind of the best policies on policing, including the 21st Century Policing Report by the Obama administration, which came out after some of the policing problems, and another group called Eight Can't Wait policies that should be done. And the only policy that we had not already implemented in the city was tasers. Now, usually you think of tasers as being used to avoid wrongful shootings, right? And that's been important, perhaps, in some places. We haven't had that issue, thankfully. And so what tasers can help do is avoid officer or suspect injuries in a physical tussle or wrestling match if you're trying to subdue a suspect who is, for some whatever reason, won't be subdued verbally. And so the pilot program is to identify. We do have officers who get injured as in those kind of circumstances, and suspects can too. So we're doing a pilot to see if these devices help reduce officer and suspect injuries. I will note that every other law enforcement agency in the county, the sheriff, IU department, and others do have tasers. So they have been used in our community, but they haven't been with police. So we're going to try that pilot and see how that goes. It went through the Board of Public Safety, and they approved it. And then there'll be a report back next year sometime to see whether we want to go with everybody. Not, this will just be a pilot. Some of the officers will have them.
And that will be a pilot program. What decides if that's successful or not? Is that up to Chief Dekoff? Is that up to the Public Safety Board? What determines if this works or not?
Yeah, I think it'll be driven by the report, the data from the police department and the chief saying, what did we find out? How did they work? Did they reduce officer injuries? Did they reduce suspect injuries? Were there any problems with their use? And every use of a taser will be cataloged and described. In that kind of circumstance, the Board of Public Safety will certainly get that report. It'll be up to the next administration to decide whether to continue, put it in the budget. The city council will have the opinion, will have the opportunity to weigh in if they want to. They won't have to, though it could be part of the budget, or they could take a separate stand on that if they want to. But it'll probably be kind of middle of next year, I expect, these things would come up.
And that is the plan moving forward. All right, what's our big? We had Blackie Brown Arts Festival last week. There's got to be a huge art festival coming up this week. It seems like every week there's something.
Hey, there's always something. You know, one other thing I just want to mention about tasers, I forgot to mention this. It's interesting, as we're trying to diversify our police force with all kinds of people, one of the issues that can come up is if you're a more diminutive person, not super strong physically, you can get in circumstances where it can be very difficult to pacify and to control someone who needs to be arrested. And so it may be that tasers help us diversify with but just body types and physically who can be a police officer. You don't necessarily want to have physical overwhelming strength in your police officers. So this may help with that to help diversify that too. So anyway, just one point I wanted to make. But there's a whole bunch of stuff last weekend, right?
Every weekend.
More coming.
Well, you've
always
got the Tuesday night market down at Switchyard Park as well. La Fiesta del Otoño is coming up
that's
Saturday.
Fun. That's fun. Don't miss that one.
And that is from noon to 4. Guess how much it costs? You get one guess only.
Let me guess. Free.
That's
a million,
how it
right?
should be. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And it will be gorgeous. Temperatures in the mid-70s as well. There's a bunch of ton of events and fun things going on as well. So it's not surprising. There's always fun stuff happening. You can learn more at bloomington.in.gov/parks, and all the calendar stuff will be right there for you. We'll let you get back to work, my friend. We always appreciate your insight and your time, and we'll do it again next week.
Thank you for asking, Mike. It's always good, and I'll hope everybody has a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.